Legacy Foundation is working to bring awareness to childhood obesity, literacy rates, and youth violence here in the KC metro area. And their director is taking a unique approach to bringing awareness to these issues by facing one of his toughest issues, his weight. Starting this week, he's pledged to lose 100 pounds in the next 6 months and believes that by turning himself into a walking billboard, he can set an example of positive change for the community. I'm Jabalani LaFall, and on today's Central Standard, we'll learn about his undertaking, plus another approach to the timeless problems facing our youth. For instance, the age-old question, what can be done to stop black men from killing other black men? We'll hear how a group called High Aspirations uses a direct mentoring approach to guide and support young men in the metro area. That's all ahead on Central Standard after this hour's news. Good morning, Kansas City. Jonathan Smith, like many community activists, can't wait for a so-called solution to societal ills. To Smith, childhood obesity, literacy, and stemming the tide of violence are all, right now, problems. Smith can't wait, and he spells that wait W-E-I-G-H-T. This is Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. Our guest is the aforementioned Jonathan Smith, the founder of Legacy Foundation, a group that helps urban youth become leaders in the community. He's taken on a personal quest recently to help bring awareness to their mission. We'll find out what that is in a moment. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
And let's start with that very personal question. How much do you currently weigh?
Well, actually, it's over 500. Yesterday, I was supposed to do my weigh-in so we can actually kick off with the launch, but I got a call from the news station that made me have to rearrange my schedule. So we'll do the weigh-in tomorrow and post it tomorrow evening.
Now, your goal is to drop about 100 pounds in 6 months, in part for your own personal health, but also to bring awareness to some of the issues that the Legacy Foundation is helping kids see themselves through.
Yes, it is. People are going to look at it and say, well, he just needs to lose weight, and that's a personal thing. True, I do need to lose weight, but the whole point is it's parallel with the struggles our youth face today, because there's many youth out here that are facing obesity where they're being picked on and bullied because of their weight, or there's some kids who might be removed from their house because of weight. And then also it's to bring awareness to our literacy, because there's a lot of adults or high school age students, seniors, who are about to take the GED, but you have to have at least a seventh grade level to read, and some are on the third grade level. And so it's different things like that I'm trying to bring awareness to and get the community rallied behind, make this a community effort.
Many people would say that these issues are intertwined. Nutrition, I talk to a lot of teachers who say it's hard to teach an eighth grader who has not eaten breakfast.
Oh, that is so true, because there's several cases of where a student might get suspended from school and have to leave for the day, but they refuse to leave because school is the only time they get a meal. And it's kind of hard for a student to concentrate if his stomach's is touching his back, as they say. But it goes much deeper than that, because if you put all three of them together, is if I'm not eating, I'm not focusing on learning. And if I'm not learning and learning how to read, then what other life if I'm left to? And then that goes into leading into the violence. So it's all comes together, and that's the reason why we chose these three.
And there's a saying in the hood, you got to eat.
Exactly.
So if you're not eating well and you're not learning ways to help you eat better, it just becomes primal.
Exactly. It's I have to survive. And what other ways do I have to survive? Because I don't know any other way.
So tell us real quick, before we get into what the Legacy Foundation is out here doing, tell us real quick what your regimen is for your highfalutin plan to drop this 100 pounds in 6 months.
Well, I'm working with Corey Phillips, who's a part of Trilogy Sports Fitness, and working with him as a trainer. And he's using a method that is high impact, but it's really based on my needs. And then I'm also working with Shanita McAfee, who is the owner of Magnolia. We're working on a nutritional system. So both of them working together, we're putting together a plan that will be successful and not one of those that is just a fly by night just to get attention.
Tell us about the lifestyle that goes into someone such as yourself who's been busy for a long time, who's grown up as you do, and how that contributes to what you now have to correct?
Well, I've been busy for a lifetime, so to speak. I've been a district director for my fraternity. I was a caregiver for my mother. I worked a full-time job and went to school full-time. So being busy in the community. So with that, I had to adapt my lifestyle to that, where I would sleep 2 to 3 hours a day for 20 plus years.
Wow.
I would not eat. If I would eat, the first meal would be after 4. Occasionally it'll be at noon. And so with this going forward, what I'm learning to do is get a minimum of 6 hours of sleep and eating 6 small portions of meal throughout the day. So today I got at least 6 hours of sleep, and I've had a small portion this morning. So I'm off to the right track. I'm just going to have to maintain that correct track.
And speaking of the correct track, what are you hearing from the kids you work with and volunteers you work with about your own personal choice as a way to foster more awareness?
Well, one, we're going to reach out to some youth and about 1 to 5 youth, and also journal their accomplishments, because there's one individual, and we're reaching out to his mother to get him involved, because, as I was saying, that there are some students who are being bullied and have low self-esteem and anxiety. So we're going to work with some students and put them on this path. And actually, in this short period of time, I've had a lot of people reach out, from people who want to lose weight and needed that kick in the behind. And there's been people who have reached out who say, well, I have a health plan. So the community seemed like they're really behind this and rallying behind it. And my volunteers for Legacy have been outstanding, because they've come through. Like one of my frat who's on their T-shirt King, he donated some of our Can't Wait shirts. The volunteers came out last night, Miss Alicia Pierce, who put together some healthy refreshments. My board, everyone has been fantastic, and we really wanted to bring awareness to this and also solicit more volunteers to come out and help with the kids.
So now that we've discovered that in your personal quest and how it fits into the Legacy Foundation, tell us about how you started the Legacy Foundation.
Well, the reason why I started the foundation, my mother was a school teacher in the Kansas City, Missouri school district. When she left because of a disability, suffered at work. And we had always talked about having a learning center, the modern day rec center, that would develop a child holistically from intellectual, sports, performing arts, the whole gamut. Well, my mother, as a school teacher, she didn't leave it in the classroom. My mother visited her students in their neighborhoods, and she at that time taught students that came from 5 different projects. And she also invited them over to her home and took them on various field trips. So she tried to be involved with their lives to make sure they could develop, and took them on field trips. Well, with that passion and development, for me, I felt is I've been too blessed to keep all this to myself. And I feel that the students need resources and different things to help them be leaders. And so I took this as an opportunity to start the Legacy Foundation, so we can put those resources in place so our students could be leaders of tomorrow on campus, church, family, or wherever.
And you're leveraging those different community institutions, families, and churches to try to get these youth.
I'm trying to foster a collaboration, because this is a community effort. I may not have the best plan, but I have a plan. And the whole thing is, if in order for a youth to be successful, it takes community involvement. So we have to do more collaborations. We have to come together. That community leaders, church, schools, neighborhoods, because we all live in this community. Either we work in this community, we live in this community, or we have children in this community. But one key thing is it's a community, and it goes back to it takes a village to raise a child.
Our guest is Jonathan Smith, founder of the Legacy Foundation, a group that helps urban youth become leaders in the community. He says he's going to lose 100 pounds in the next 6 months to help raise awareness for the problems facing area children, obesity, literacy, and, of course, youth violence. You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR, streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm Jabalani LaFall. Kansas City, between childhood obesity, literacy, and crime, what do you think are the biggest problems, and how would you go about finding a solution? Give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also hit us up on email at centralstandard@kcur.org. Definitely looking to hear from the community as we talk to Mr. Smith. Mr. Smith, the problem with the youth here in this city, and it's endemic in other cities, seems like a battle on many fronts where people in all walks of life and civic life and economic and political life and circles look for areas of blame. How do you handle the delicate balance between actionable solutions and politics?
Well, see, I go with the philosophy of we're going to do it or we're not. And that's when I sit down and meet with people, because you have people who have meeting after meeting after meeting with a different name for the meeting. And my philosophy is we're going to do it or we're not. Right. And anyone who's worked with me know that's how I operate. And when you look at TV, you look at everything, everyone has someone to blame. And there's enough blame to go around. But what I'm doing is a different approach. I'm standing up and saying, you know what, I accept some blame. But let me present a solution. Let me try to find a way that we can work together. And it goes back to that old proverbial, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. This is a huge issue. So how do we solve it? It's one issue at a time. So I'm taking a step as, let me try to start this, and we'll just get the ball rolling and get the community involved.
And in those meetings, there's always the proverbial elephant in the room, so to speak.
Oh, yes.
And that is the problem of faith in the youth. So if you're eating this big elephant, going along the metaphor and illusion of weight that we've been talking about so far, what's your first bite? I mean, it's a big elephant. What's your first bite?
Well, the first bite is really tackling education, because education is key. You need it as far as employment. You need to, if you understand what's going on, it's not necessarily book smart. You have to understand youth. And there's kids leaving gangs every day. And it's just a matter of understanding and being educated on what are the issues of our youth and the time and consistency they need. If you spend time with some children or some child, you'll be surprised at what they can do. And if you can use that to help channel that into other things, then that's when you start to grow. So I think the biggest issue is going after educating the community is what is going on in the community. What are our youth really facing? Because a lot of people are not aware of how much our youth are homeless. A lot of people are not aware of how much bullying is going on in school. So it's a matter of starting with educating the community so they can be aware of what's really going on. And then we can start tackling the bigger issues.
So you mentioned education. And tell us about your tutoring and mentoring program in partnership with PACES, how that works and how that helps you foster this holistic approach that you've been talking about.
Okay. Our PACES tutoring program, and I, again, solicit volunteers, we tutor every Thursday from 6 to 7:30 with students that are affiliated with PACES. And we've also opened it up smallly to Wyandotte County, which is the Kansas City, Kansas school district. And we've tutored from kindergarten through the 12th grade. And some of our success stories are we worked with one student and the mother was so inspired, she decided to go back and start working on her college degree. We've seen some students who have been in F in some classes and raise it up to at least a C. And we tutored in physics, music, theater, reading, vocabulary, algebra. So we've tutored in pretty much all the subjects in school. So when people are asked, well, where can I help? Just come in of your time. We're sure we can tap into something you specialize in or some of your stronger talents to work with these kids, because they need consistency in their life. And that's how we can start making a difference.
Donna and Shani writes in to ask, have you taken any lessons from the Harlem Children's Zone? There was a documentary a while back about some of the charter schools, and the former mayor, Mark Funkhauser, had spoke of setting up these sort of targeted schools and safe zones in impoverished neighborhoods to create a safe zone, essentially. Have you thought about that? Have you talked to community leaders about creating safe zones so that you can actually do your work?
I can say I haven't to this point, but that's not an option off the table. That's why I'm seeking the community to give me that information so we can start the process. And if starting with safe zones is one of the ways to getting the community involved, let's go that route. But I try the approach of how we're going to make an impact. So if we started, will it have the longevity to continue? And that's what I hate to see is when we start something and it falls off.
Here's a question I know that you'll be very eager to answer from Bob in Lawrence. He asks, are the youth problems in urban KC the same as suburban metro area? Are you prepared? Is he prepared with the question?
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of you, Jonathan Smith, are you, Jonathan Smith, prepared to expand your efforts, or do suburban youth already have programs that give them more help? I know you're very eager to answer that.
Well, I'm going to say this, that problems for urban youth are the same problems for the urban core. The suburban core. Because they experience bullying, they experience homelessness, they experience not eating. So I'm prepared to help all youth. My program is set up to become eventually a national program where parents can tap into a network to find out what programs are available. So let's say you have a child who attends school out south and you're looking for a mentoring or a tutoring program out south. You'll be able to tap in and find out what programs are available. Are you sending your kid to Florida to be with their grandparents? Well, you'll be able to tap in and see what programs to let the grandparents know what's available. My effort is a collaboration. It's not that you're a part of legacy. You're a part of a channel, a network that's putting together programs to be accessible for parents to get their children involved, because I can't serve all the children. So if we as a community say, well, Legacy is serving 100 students here, High Aspiration is serving 100 students here, Rubies is serving 100 students here, Boys and Girls Club or whomever the organization, if we come together and work collaboratively, then we'll be able to help youth in the inner city and the suburbs.
We'll have Henry Warsh and Malik Robinson from High Aspirations here in the later part of the hour. Jonathan Smith, can you give us some anecdotal evidence that some of the approaches the Legacy Foundation has employed so far are working? What are some of the success stories that you've witnessed since you established this organization?
Well, it goes back to, well, one success story that someone shared with me last night was because I share information as to other programs going on. I can't remember at the top of my head who was hosting the ACT pretest and different things. Well, I posted that information letting someone know as far as where to go so their student can go. And they took the test and got prepared and was able to take the ACT. Then they later on got a call for their daughter to get a full ride scholarship. That's a success story as far as working with collaboration, because I wasn't putting on the program, but I shared the information about someone else. As far as our tutoring, it goes back to seeing the students, their grades increase. Last year, we had two students who had problems working in groups and had problems working with sharing. Well, we had an assignment where it was a science experiment, but it was fun. They were able to work together and then became competitive, and they were able to work, and they brought them out their comfort zone. So it allowed them to work outside of their normal, well, I just work by myself, or if I'm not winning, then I don't want to be a part of it. And then also seeing the students' grades increase. So it goes back to, if you got time, spend with these children, you'll be able to see some success stories.
What's different, Jonathan Smith? You went to school, came through high school, came through college, pledged Alpha Phi Alpha. Now you're involved in the youth mm-hmm. empowerment movement. What changed since you went to school to what problems these kids are now facing today?
What's changed? That's a good question, because I'm thinking, where do I begin? Because, and maybe I was blinded because of the way my mother handled things, but I feel that what's changed is the importance of education. When I was going to school, the question was, where are you going to college? That was the question. Now it's, if I'm going to college. There's no plan after high school. And that's something that I find that is troubling, that there's not that talk for as when I leave high school, what do I do and where do I go to succeed? That's one of the things I find challenging. And, you know, one question my mother asked me growing up and even into college, and it's one simple question that would told her so much about how my life was going in school. She said, "What did you learn today?" If I could not answer that question, that means either I was not paying attention in school, I was having trouble with the information, I was not focused, I was playing in school. But the very last thing was the teacher method of teaching. But that one simple question answers so much. Because if I can tell you what I've learned, then that helps reinforce what I've learned. And if a lot of parents hear my voice today, just ask that one simple question every day. What did you learn in school today? Because you don't go to school just to play. You don't go to school just to look around and be on Facebook, texting, or whatever. You go to school with the purpose of learning. So if I can't answer you that question, that should tell you that maybe you're not focused in school, or maybe you're having problems with the information.
What are the problems that you encounter with your kids working with retention of that information?
The problems I have with the students that I'm working with is sometimes they want to be the class clown. And sometimes when that you want to be the class clown, it's because you don't really understand the information or you're not focused. And so even in the time that we're tutoring, we can start off in 30 to 45 minutes and it's quiet, everyone's focused. But if that one sort of pin drops, then it could get everyone off. And it's because they're not focused. So you have to maintain their attention, and that's where sometimes the problem is their attention span.
And how do you get that focus? It's very difficult.
It's very difficult, and sometimes then you have to shift and go one-on-one with this student so he doesn't be a disrupt for the rest of the students. But you have to be creative. So not every solution has the same answer, but you have to be creative with the solutions.
Are you training volunteers to be creative with the solutions that they bring to tutoring?
I'm training them and also asking them to bring some solutions with them. Because, again, I may not have all the answers, so I'm willing to listen to see what other solutions you have in order for us to be successful.
Are volunteers hard to come by?
Yes.
And why?
I don't know if it's people do not have time or they don't feel that they can bring anything to the table. And that's what I keep reiterating. If you just give us a little time, you will be able to be a success story as well. And that's not just with my organization. That's with all the organizations that they are having problems finding volunteers. And that's why my biggest thing is please come out and volunteer.
There's a hodgepodge of community organizations. We're going to speak to one in the second half of this hour, High Aspirations. Aim for Peace was on here. There are a lot of charter school initiatives, the Hope Center for one. There's a lot of segmentation and splintering of these sort of community-based groups. Is that diluting the volunteer pool? Is that creating this sort of mania of illusion of choice?
I don't know if it's diluting because there's not one organization that has over abundance amount of volunteers. I think everyone is trying to pull for those resources, and I'm coming up with creative ways to get volunteers. And
like losing this
like losing the weight of going to like over in Wyandotte County, and I'm sure they have it over here in Missouri, is going to where the high school students need to have so many community hours. So since they're in school learning, they can teach the younger students. So we're looking at creative ways to get people involved.
What skills are you looking for in these volunteers?
If you're a high school student, if you're an expert in various subject matters, we need those. If you just have time for mentoring, we need mentoring. But really, reading, math is some of most of the subjects that we need assistance with. But again, we've tutored in music, so if you know music, we have a place for you. If you know theater, we have a place for you. So we're working with a gamut of students.
What are the long-term commitments that you're looking for volunteers? You mentioned earlier that you'd like to expand nationally. What are the long-term commitments that you're looking for?
Well, I want to firm up the foundation here locally before we consider expanding. But what we need commitment at this point is if you can do from January to the end of the school year on Thursday from 6 to 7:30 over in Wyandotte County off of 47th and State Avenue. If you can commit, and I know things come up, and so you may miss once or twice on those Thursdays, but if you can commit from now to the end of the school year, you'll be an asset to our efforts.
Jonathan Smith, the name of your group is Legacy Foundation. What does the word legacy mean to you?
Well, legacy is an acronym for leadership, empowerment, growth, achievement comes from our youth. And that's our legacy. Our youth are our legacy. And also, the youth has part of is you. Our legacy comes from you. Our children look for leadership. So that's all that encompasses legacy.
Our guest is Jonathan Smith, founder of the Legacy Foundation, a group that helps urban youth become leaders in the community. He says he's going to lose 100 pounds in the next 6 months. That's 17 pounds a month, brother.
Yes, and it's all in preparation for our 5K, 10K run June 9th.
We'll have the details of Legacy Foundation up on our website at centralstandard.org. Thank you for coming, Jonathan Smith.
Thank you for having me.
We're going to take a quick break. When we return, we go from legacies to high aspirations as our show theme on youth empowerment continues. Welcome back to Central Standard. In ghettos all across America, there are young black men who seldom leave the small radius of their block to venture out into the city, out into the region, out into the world. Their view is insular, their frame of reference small. Here in Kansas City, one group sees to it that boys get to run the bases at Kauffman Stadium's small playfield, that they get to learn about the community at the Lucille Bluford branch of the library, and witness men doing something other than crime. I'm Jabalani LaFall. Our guests in the second half of the hour, in which we're focusing on youth empowerment, is Henry Warsh, founder of High Aspirations, and Malik Robinson, a young man benefiting from the program. Welcome to Central Standard, gentlemen.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. And hello, Kansas City.
All right. Now tell us about High Aspirations, Mr. Warsh.
High Aspirations is a mentoring program, and what we do is we were founded in 2004, and it's a Missouri, Kansas City, Missouri-based model. We are 501c3, and we support young men socially, emotionally, academically, and spiritually. And we've been up probably, I think the math would show, since 2004. So that would be how many years, Malik?
A long time.
That's a math question, brother.
A math question.
That would be about 7 years.
Yep.
About 7 years, roughly.
So Malik, he's how old now? How old are you, Malik?
16.
16, so he was about 9.
We have some statistics here. Of the original 21 young men involved in the High Aspirations program, 4 are still attending high school, 15 have graduated from high school, 11 attended or are attending post-secondary school, either a 2-year or a 4-year college, and 3 are working full-time, 2 are serving in the military, and 2 are deceased, one from an auto accident, the other one is murdered. Only one didn't finish high school and is currently unemployed. These are actually pretty positive numbers for you guys, considering the stakes being so high in those neighborhoods. Tell us why the focus of young black men specifically, Henry Warsh.
I can tell you about a story of a success story that's really not mentioned there, and of a young man. And the story of this young man is as follows. As an infant, this young man was abandoned, malnourished, and diagnosed with failure to thrive. This young man had stuttering problems so bad that teachers and people around him thought he was retarded. After this young man graduated from high school, he briefly attended community college until dropping out due to lack of funds. The next semester, he returned when he learned of the Henry W. Block Scholarships Program. As a result, he graduated from the Metropolitan Community Colleges, transferred to UMKC, and graduated with a bachelor's degree. Shortly thereafter, he went to receive his master's from the Henry W. Block School of Business and Public Administration, purchased a home, and united with his college found love. After not knowing his biological family for over 33 years, he has now connected with them, and for the first time, his life is in his life, he is here to tell a story
Now stop real quick. Who is that young man?
I'm talking about me.
Exactly.
Talking about me.
Exactly. And is that why you started this group?
It was a part of it because if I survive, I know I can encourage these other young men to survive, and I can show them how to do it too. And the numbers prove that.
We have Malik Robinson with us today. Tell us your story, young man, at 15. You've already been through a lot. You're part of the program. Tell us where you're from.
Well, I am from Kansas City, Missouri. I've grown up here since 16 years. I loved family, always been around them. I was always the outcast, the big happy kid, the one that's the wild child, as most people refer to it as. When it came to March 5th of 2011, I experienced a tragedy in my family with my brother. He had passed away.
What happened to him?
He was actually gunned down in the early morning. The case is still open, so I can't really discuss much about it. So,
right, there's still an active investigation involved in that.
Yes.
Was he in the streets at all?
Actually, no. At the time, he was getting his life together because he had got released from jail because he went to jail on a false statement that the fingers were pointed towards him, saying that he was the one that was involved in a robbery when he was only at home. But they say that he was with the person that had done the crime. So he went to jail and got out. He was originally going to Penn Valley so he can start his own lawn care business. And at that time, he was just getting everything back on track. He was getting his life back together. He was seeing his kids once again. Everything was just going great for him. And then it only took probably 5 minutes for it to happen. His friends just loved him. Next thing you know, you look up, he's laying down in the middle of the street, and nobody knows how it happened. Nobody knows what's the purpose. It's one of those things that you look at and see, what do you do in life after tragic?
And your brother's name is Maurice
Yes.
Robinson.
Yes.
And what did Maurice's death, which we should note for anybody just joining us, happened this year?
Yes.
In March.
Yes.
As he was getting his life together.
Mm-hmm.
What lessened, Malik, did that give to you in terms of your own life? How did that change your life?
Well, it made me look at it as just because somebody else took his life doesn't mean that I have to go out there and try taking somebody else's. It made me look at different ways of making a new beginning for myself, turning something tragic into something positive. Basically, speaking your mind about certain things and what happened, showing that you can always make plenty of ways to change stuff. You can share your story as many times as you want with certain people and get the word out, letting them know that violence is not the key.
And what is your opinion, Henry Warsh, on stories such as Maurice Robinson? And we even had a young man here who sat right in that seat that you sat in, who is now dead from a murder, Marcus Lee. Stories of these men. Why, in your opinion, are there so many young black men with low aspirations? The name of your group is High Aspirations. Why are there so many young black men with low aspirations?
First of all, it really starts with facts that only 70% of these young men, 70% of these young men are expected not to graduate from high school in the first place. 30% of them are expected to make it as a whole. And 30% of the persons who were killed on the national average were honor roll students. And majority of those were between the ages of 12 and 18 African-American males. Those numbers speak volumes to the reason as to why this crisis is happening. And the answer to this is having programs like High Aspirations, where we support them socially, emotionally, academically, and spiritually, and give them a place where they can come. Because 9 times out of 10, we don't know about the things that's happening in these young males' lives because they don't talk about them. But the problem is there, and often it's too late when we learn that they're dead.
Malik, your brother was killed, and you had suggested in an article, a recent article in the Kansas City Star, the idea of safe homes for teens as a deterrent to violence. What made you think of that idea, and how would you implement it?
Well, the reason why I thought of a safe house was because when I look around nowadays, I see a lot of people my age just running the streets, getting into trouble, not doing something with their lives. So I started thinking about, like, what will it take to show these kids that you can go somewhere safe, be around people that can try helping you, get your education up, try helping you in all ways as possible just to make it to the next level in your future. And the whole idea of the safe house was just based off of that, just trying to get people to see the brighter side of life, not the negative. Because if you look around nowadays, all you see is you can see like a 15-year-old just running the streets, selling dope, selling this, just getting up to no trouble. And basically, you could just turn and look at them and just be like, is this really what you want to lead towards in your life? You want to see jail, or do you want to see death? And a lot of people don't realize that that's the main cause today, is death. And a lot of the time you got to process that down to a barrel where you got to dig deep down inside and basically just show that you're willing to make a change. You're willing to make it to that level. You just got to provide yourself and surround yourself by a lot of good people. And that's what I've been doing with High Aspirations.
You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR, streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm Jabulani LaFall. Today's show is focused on programs serving KC's urban youth. Our guests in the second half of the hour are Henry Warsh, founder of High Aspirations, and the voice you just heard, a very courageous voice, Malik Robinson, whose brother Maurice was murdered early this year. He suggested safe homes for teens as a deterrent to violence. Kansas City, what do you think of that idea? What are some of the first steps you would take to prevent black-on-black crime here in the metro? Give us a call, 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or shoot us an email at centralstandard@kcur.org. Gentlemen, for me growing up in really bad neighborhoods, we had some similar things to your safe house as you were talking about, Malik. I remember one thing called a teen post where all the pushers and prostitutes and gang members, it was off limits, and it was understood that that was off limits. The Boys and Girls Club, it was the same thing. Henry, there used to be a little more honor among thieves. There was a lot of violence with you and me coming up. We're around the same age, but there is none now. So one of the main complaints of community-wide, when you look at circumstances in the wake of the plaza disturbances and the recent shooting there, is that you don't have constructive activities for teens both in the game and teens on the fringe. Do you agree with that? And if so, what's your solution?
Yes, I wholeheartedly agree with we don't have enough for these young men and young ladies to do. And they need time and attention, but they need effective, structured time and attention that's going to be something that they want to do, not something that we create. Because if we create it, guess what? They're not going to want to do it. It's just like when we were coming up and mom wondered why we stayed upstairs all the time and we listened to the radio and we played Nintendo and some other things. We created that. We created that environment. We created that atmosphere. So it's going to have to be something that's conducive to something that they created themselves. And pretty much if we don't take this gorilla by the hand, this big problem that we have, and help these young men and young ladies, we're going to have a lot of problems on our hands.
Henry Warsh, founder of High Aspirations, and Malik Robinson, a young man involved in the program, are here on Central Standard. We're asking you to call in to talk about prevention of black-on-black crime here in the metro area. 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. We do have Derica on the line from KC. Derica, welcome to Central Standard.
Hi, and it's actually pronounced Derica.
Derica, okay.
Yes. Hi, well, I just wanted to share that I think nonprofits are great, but sometimes they kind of catch the problem at the end. So I think a more preventable measure would be something that would be more sustainable, like businesses that export labor into other communities. I think if young men develop a sense of work ethic, that would be greater than trying to catch the problem once they've already committed some offense or fell into some trap.
What do you think of that idea, Henry Warsh?
I think it's great. That's exactly what we do. We're a proactive mentoring program. So we focus on the young men who haven't done things that they don't have criminal records. We work with the young men that are from 8 to 18. And so that's our focus. And these young men, often with this great support, they do well. 86% success rate, I believe. That's the math. So, yes, you're right.
And so you're catching them in these critical years, 8 to 18.
Right.
And what's so critical about those years?
The critical thing about those years is, for a lack of better terms, to come down to earth. They begin to smell themselves. There we go. And sometimes they often begin to gain a sense of creating who they think they are rather than who they really are. They're not created to be monsters. They're not created to be mean. Our culture is a culture of great heritage and great respect and responsibility. We face that every day, that our character is just outstanding. We're very nice and decent people. We say hi when no one else will say hi to us. And so if we can get them to understand that's going to be a good thing.
And Malik, how are you shaping your own character based on what Mr. Warsh is saying, based on what you know, based on being out there in the front lines, based on having friends that are in the streets?
Well, when it comes to having friends on the streets, sometimes you got to learn how to bear with them. You got to bear with them in ways that they can understand. So I can be talking to them about something logical, but then they want to put a street term to it. So you can bear with them in ways of, I could see that you got street smarts and I got educational smarts. You put your educational smarts together with your street smarts, it works out perfectly. Just got to tune some things up. It's basically like you were working on a car. All they got to do is just tune up audio sound, tune up this, tune up that. I've talked to many people that are similar to me. Like, I will use an example of one of my friends. His name is John. I would say John, he's similar to my situation. He's very smart, educated, and he has a lot of street smarts. When it came to him and the gang affiliations, that's when he starts slacking off. But when it came to school, if you see him in class, it would be like, man, I never even thought of something like that. Because he would use something he would learn from, like, a street hustle and combine it with his mathematics. And you would see that, I wouldn't even think of something like that. I would think of it as a way of learning it out of a book. So it's basically you got to learn how to bear with them and piecing together their smarts and your smarts, and seeing if you can push it to a level where you can put them into a level that they like and see what they can do with it using their street smarts.
Henry Warsh, Malik Robinson is mentoring his own peer group with the explanation that he's just given. Why is mentorship so important? Is mentorship meeting these young men where they are?
Yeah, I believe that life is like a jungle. Sometimes it makes you wonder how you
keep
them
going under.
You know, and they're helping each other. It's reaching back. It's passing the baton. It's actually not forgetting about where you came from, who brought you along. And furthermore, it's actually beginning to bear fruit. And if a fig tree isn't bearing any fruit, you have to do what?
Walk away.
That's right. So, I mean, bearing fruit is what you just heard. He's reaching out. And I just really applaud Malik every time I talk to him.
Who are your mentors coming up? You basically told us your life story being written off at a young age, but pushing through that and coming up all the way through the block school and then coming back to your community to reach your hand down, so to speak, or even reach your hand across. So who are your mentors coming up?
I tell you, I don't hesitate to say this. I had a wonderful praying mom. She did everything she could for me, and she adopted me, but I still sometimes didn't do the right thing. So people like Thurman Nathaniel Mitchell, KCTV5, and right now, Mr. Henry W. Block, the founder of H&R Block. I was a Block scholar, and Mr. Block is a wonderful person in my life. I respect him, honor him, I love him, because he tells me things often about what I need to do to help my walk along. He came to my wedding when me and my wife got married, and my own father was unable to physically make it. But Mr. Block walked through those doors, and it made my day. And I just said, I want to be that kind of man someday that'll make somebody's day and help these young people understand that it is someone who cares about them, and they don't have to live life not thinking that someone cares about them and waste their life.
That's an interesting story that you mentioned about Mr. Block and his influence in your life, and you're obviously an influence in Malik Robinson's life. It's one thing to ask these children to have high aspirations for themselves, but what can we as adults in the community at large do to encourage these kids to have high aspirations for themselves, especially the good ones, the ones on the fringe? The ones that could go either way.
I believe what they need to do is acknowledge these successes and support programs such as High Aspirations. That's a start. And then secondly, I believe that we need to come and support this Urban Alliance that started last month, December the 27th at the Lucille Bluford Library from 11:30 until 1. There will be an Urban Alliance that's a consortium of services coming together to support one another, to serve the common good of the inner city urban core. All of these nonprofits that are doing the same work and doing that are scattered all over the place, this is your time to come and to work together at the Lucille Bluford Library on the 27th from 11:30 to 1.
What are the challenges in working together? I just had the Legacy Foundation founder, Jonathan Smith, on. He talks about there being a lot of groups with high aspirations, wanting to make a good legacy for these kids, to coin those terms. Stuff like the Urban Alliance, why is that so crucial? Why is unity so crucial?
Unity is crucial because we can partner when we go after money. They're doing it on the East Coast and the West Coast. Why can't we do it here in Kansas City? And we're welcoming partnerships. And so that's what the Urban Alliance will bring to the table.
What do you think, Henry Warch, has been the biggest hindrance to a decline in the type of mentorship you had from Henry Block and others coming up over the years?
The biggest decline?
The biggest reason for the decline in mentorship.
I believe that in my life there hasn't been one, but people are busy now.
People are busy now.
Yeah, people are so busy, and there's such a demand on life, and we have to begin and understand that we're all human, that no one's perfect, and if someone just don't have the time right now, that don't mean a year or two later they won't have the time. So we just have to be patient because we all are human and we all have things that are going on in our individual lives.
Certainly. Malik, if you could reach out to potential mentors that would help High Aspirations or come in and help groups like the Legacy Foundations or attend these Urban Alliance meetings and consortiums, what would you tell them from essentially ground zero? What would you tell them?
Well, when it comes to getting people to join a good cause, something that's trying to help young people get to their next levels in life, just think of how you started out back then and how you got to where you were today. If you share your story with them, if you get deep with them about it, if you sit them down for once, and if you are if you really a true-hearted person and you're willing to commit to making a person join, or you're trying to help out someone else get to their expectations, do it. Don't stop it. Just follow your heart. That's what Mr. Wash has taught me, basically. Follow your heart and follow your dreams. He's helped so many people do that. He's benefited me to get out there and reach to young people. And I've been trying to mentor some other people, trying to get them to come in so they could see how to live this life of getting to your next level in life, pretty much. Trying to get your education up, meet your new standards. Now, if I go to an adult, it's more like I can bear with your situation because you've been through it, clearly. So all I can ask from you is, are you willing to help another one get to that next level where you're standing at today? That's all that matters.
And what are your aspirations?
My aspirations? Just to go higher and higher.
Higher and higher. Our guests have been Henry Warsh, founder of High Aspirations, and the young man's voice you just heard who wants to go higher and higher is Malik Robinson, a young man involved with the program High Aspirations. Thank you, gentlemen, for coming to Central Standard.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And tune in tomorrow for the Walt Bodine Show with co-host Russ Simmons and the Movie Critics. Our show was produced by Andrea Salenzi, executive produced by Bill Anderson. Our multimedia intern and producer is Tamika Weatherspoon. Kim Noble is our announcer. Emily Mutzer manages our website. Central Standard's intro theme music is by Miles Bonney, and what you're hearing right now is composed by the Will Knots. Up to Date is next with our weekend to-do list. I'm Jabalani LaFall. This is Central Standard. Enjoy your day.